Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Well, folks, I hope you're enjoying your holiday weekend. It was a good one for the U.S. men's national team, of course. They beat Guatemala, the giant Guatemala of world football, 2-1. They split possession. It was a phenomenal performance. Of course, I'm being a little sarcastic here, but nonetheless, we are going up against Mexico in the final on Sunday. We will make a recording of that final afterwards with a special guest. But today, I'm recapping the semifinal with Benny Rogers. Per usual, it's not the typical recap that you get elsewhere. It's more of the evergreen type. It's not like we're talking about, oh, these were the lineups, and then this player got substituted in minute 78, and then this is when the goals happened. No, we don't do that stuff here, as you very well know. So we talk about a bit about that and so many other things. I hope you enjoy this episode, but first, of course, what supports it are the coaching education products that we developed, we crafted by ourselves, and not some cockamamie contraption made up of reading books or articles or a synthesis of external materials. It is of our own personal practitionership, our own personal experience over decades of pioneering American youth soccer, and now, since we moved on to the professional level, we have even more perspectives for you. So please head on over, coaches, to 343coaching.com. There are both free and premium programs for you there. I should add that here in the United States, a vast swath of the country starts up their new seasons, their fall seasons. You know, coming up, it's coming up maybe next month, the competition start or the fall season starts. So now is the perfect time to hop on board and not wait any longer. And parents, you need to guide your players as best as humanly possible. Certainly much better, or you would like to do it certainly much better than you think you're doing it now. And we can help with that. You go to 343masterclass.com. Our decades of coaching experience, again, do not go to waste. We have codified it all and then made it available for you. So 343masterclass.com for parents. And for the little ones who are coaching 7 versus 7, coaches, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, here we go. Gold nuggets galore, like I always say.
Well, first of all, dude, rest in peace, Thiago Jota. You saw that, bro? So sad.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
Devastating, bro.
One day you're here, the next day you're gone. That's fucking bananas.
Yeah, dude, and this guy was an all-time high right now. Winning Premier League, winning with Portugal. He just got married 2 weeks ago. Makes you take a step back and just, you know, be grateful that we're here. It's crazy, bro.
100%, man. Any day now, you're going to wake up, you're going to be like, where's Gary? And I'm like, oh, dude, he just disappeared.
Bro, don't say that, dude. That's why you need to visit the doctor more, bro.
I have not visited the doctor. But anyway.
All right.
Yeah, what do you want to talk about, Ben?
So much to talk about, bro. I mean, I think our predictions from the last recording were spot on. The U.S. is going to win. Mexico is going to win. Diego Luna once again becomes a cult hero. Did you actually watch the game yesterday?
I was watching the Avialta game. So whenever that went to halftime, that's when I switched over. So obviously I missed the 2 Diego Luna goals in live action.
Right.
I just saw things come across my feed. And I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. You're playing Guatemala. And I don't believe the golazo things because they're making it seem like, oh, my God, incredible. So I'm like, oh, what did this guy do? Did he do a bicycle kick? Did he do some crazy scissor stuff outside the box or something? And then I looked at the goals, and they're nice goals, but like Ronaldo does, right, with his hands. Hey, easy, relax. What are we talking about here? We have people scoring goals like this left and right across the world. Chill.
Yeah. And, dude, like, don't get me wrong. I'm happy for the guy. Like, you know, he's doing awesome. But again, like I said in the last recording, dude, this is against Guatemala. This is against CONCACAF opponents. I want to see him do it against Spain or Brazil, Argentina. Like, I think once he gets on that stage, I don't think it's going to be the same. And to your point about the Americans getting so hyped up and so excited, I mean, I'm sure you saw Twitter last night, dude. Everybody's blowing up. Did you see the videos I sent you of, now there's even more people saying like, oh, Diego Luna is the American Messi. And some people didn't believe me on the last one. They're like, oh, I haven't seen that. Now, dude, it's insane, bro.
It's out of control. It's out of control. And it doesn't, Benny, he doesn't have to do that against Spain, France, Argentina, Brazil. Just do it against, I don't know, Poland or Turkey or, you know, it doesn't have to be crazy, or do it against, I don't know, Venezuela or something like that. It doesn't have to be the top of the mountain.
Yeah. Even if he does it against Mexico, bro, people are still going to be like, oh, look at this. But Mexico's shocking, dude. Yeah. So I have a feeling
Mexico is the worst Mexico in generations, Benny. I don't know if you've been following me on Twitter or X for a very long period of time, but for starting like 6-7 years ago, I already started saying that this is the worst Mexico of all times.
Yeah. No, you've been saying that for a while now. And they've only gotten worse, though.
It's pretty bad. I mean, they barely beat their opponents here in CONCACAF now.
Yeah, for sure. Now, dude, in just watching the game last night, and you see this stat of like, oh, the U.S. has reached the Gold Cup semifinal 12 tournaments in a row. I mean, that's just supposed to show you what a joke this tournament is, bro. Because if that was the case, and the U.S., they're always making the final of this tournament, like, why haven't they had any success against European countries? Or why haven't they had any real success in the World Cup, bro? Like, the comment that sticks on my mind that you made last time is, like, this tournament is basically stat padding and just, you know, elevating players on the national team and giving the country kind of like a false sense of hope. Because it seems like every time, bro, like, oh, the U.S. Gold Cup final, or they're going to win, and they just won the Gold Cup final, the future is bright, I think we're going to be successful in the World Cup now, and this tournament's a joke, bro.
Yeah, I'm looking at the stats right now. I'm not a big stats guy, as you know. Well, actually, let's take that back. I literally have degrees in physics and mathematics. So I'm a math guy and a stats guy and all those sorts of things. That's not what I mean by I'm not a stats guy. I'm not a stats guy when it comes to like soccer specific stats. Like, ooh, just look at the stats and that'll tell you the whole story of the game. Or look at the stats and that'll tell you the whole story of a player. So on and so forth. But if I'm looking at the high level stats that you can just pick off the internet here, possession was split, you know, 51 Guatemala, 49 the U.S. It's 50-50, basically. Shots, 20 Guatemala, 12 the United States, Benny. Shots on target, basically split. 5 Guatemala, 7 the United States. So I don't know, dude. Like I said, I'm not a stats guy. But if you look at that and you look at the two opponents, so it's the United States and Guatemala, okay? Guatemala, okay? Chapines, all right? And that is what the game stats look like. There's something that ain't quite right then, honestly. It really should. When you have that big of a disparity, or in theory or on paper, it should be that big of a disparity. It should be like the United States 63% possession, right? Yes. And it should be the United States has 21 shots to Guatemala's 5 or something. That's really what the stats kind of should be looking like when you have a situation like this. But it's kind of split down the middle.
Yeah, dude. No, Guatemala was going at us, bro. In like the last 15 minutes, these guys were holding on for dear life, bro. 2-1 lead. Like, that shouldn't be happening against Guatemala, bro. You know, it's insane. And then the thing that bugs me is everybody's excuse, bro, is like, oh, Gary, this is the B team of the U.S. Like, you know, give them a break. Like, okay, bro. Our fucking D team should be able to win this tournament. No problem, bro. I mean, look at the size of the other countries in this tournament, bro.
We've talked about this before, and we should do a whole episode on this at some point just to be crystal clear and give the full context. But I've said it a million times and people need to digest this. There really isn't that big of a difference between A, B, C, and D. There really isn't. There really isn't, guys. The only reason there's like an A team is because those players happen to have been elevated years ago to the platform that is the U.S. men's national team, and that causes them to be elevated at the club level, and that causes the pedigree elevation, and that group is kept together for a very long time. So all of a sudden it's like, oh, these are the guys. So anybody that you call in from outside of that group or that bubble, that's not an A team player though. That's a B lister, that's a C lister, that's a D lister. It's just not reality. And you can swap pieces and the team's not going to be that different, Ben. It really isn't. You can swap. You can put Malik Tillman in there instead of Weston McKennie. There's no What's the difference? You think there's a massive difference? There's not a massive difference. You could put Diego Luna in there instead of Brendan Aaronson, because Brendan Aaronson was the guy. Remember, he was one of the A-list. He was one of the A-team guys. And he's kind of dropped off the map because he's not being elevated anymore. Pochettino chooses somebody else. Or you can put Diego Luna in there and Christian Pulisic doesn't play the 10. It's Diego Luna. It's like, okay, is there a massive drop-off? Maybe there's a drop-off, but is it like, oh my God, you know, Messi's not on the field anymore. It isn't, Benny. It's just not like this, dude. Or you can put in Tim Ream instead of some other dude, or put in Chris Richards instead of some other dude. A, B, C, and D doesn't mean what people think it means.
Gary, what about against higher level European teams or South American teams? Can you see the difference in those games? Like, for example, this group that we have right now against Germany, would it be a 5-0 smashing? Whereas if it was the so-called 18, would it be less?
I think if this group is given more and more games together, like the other A-team group was given a whole, you know, five-year cycle or six-year cycle together, then there isn't that much of a difference.
Yes. No, that makes sense. Bro, Aubameyang, bro, I know we talked about him before. This guy was absolutely shocking last night, bro. I mean,
it was bad?
It was bad, bro. He had, there was one where he was one-on-one with the keeper. It was offside, but it was still, like, questionable as to whether he'd finish. Tried to place it. It just went, like, way far right. Another chance, he was 1v1 at the keeper. Smashed it straight at the keeper. And then he regained the ball and fucking shanked it. There was, like, a run-up play where Diego Luna was making a run. This guy played it, like, 10 yards behind him. It was pretty wild to watch, bro. So, like you said in the last one, Pochettino must see something in training where he's trying to get something out of this guy. But it was bad, bro.
Or I don't know. Or maybe he just wants a different profile, player profile for that position. Then, I don't know. MLS has a gun over to his head or something. It's like, you must play this player so that we can make this transfer to the English Championship happen, or wherever. Where is this guy going? It's rumored that he's going to the English Championship or something, Derby County or something like this.
Let me see. Yeah, you're right. Closing in on a transfer to English Championship side Derby County for a fee of $7 million.
Amazing, bro.
Good for him.
So good.
Good for him, bro. And anyways, I want to read some of the comments from our last episode. I know you okay. Responded to all of them, but I want to give you a chance more to expand. The first guy said, instead of insulting the casual fans and let them learn on their own, criticize the Fed. The USMNT are the symptom, and I will never blame them for their shortcomings because they don't have any power.
Yeah. Okay. You want me to react, respond?
Yeah.
Dude, the fan base, I've said it a million times, and the supporters and the practitioners, the people who work in the space have all the power. The fans have the power. And you brought up a great example in our last episode, Benny, where you said, hey, the Galaxy has been shit for 7 years or however long, terrible management, terrible everything, terrible, not making playoffs. So when you make the playoffs, you get bounced right away, all of that stuff. And then finally, the supporter groups had enough and the fans had had enough. And they started boycotting and they started being extremely vocal for change to occur. And then the Galaxy bent the knee eventually. And they made massive sweeping changes, wiping the slate clean all of a sudden. And that helped the organization, because look at last season. Now, this season, another story. We can go down that tangent if you want, Benny. But the fans caused change. The same thing is with the ecosystem as a whole and the U.S. men's national team in particular and the federation in particular. It is the fans who have to rise up and fight the power. So that is why I am putting the blame or putting the weight on the shoulders of the fans. You guys are responsible for what you see. When you support shit, when you support a shit product, this is what you get, a shit product and a shit organization. So if you keep deflecting, saying, oh, you know, let's only talk about the federation's mismanagement or Pochettino or Cindy Parlo Cohn or whatever, that ain't gonna do it, guys. You guys are the problem. When you are out there and you're starting to complain, oh, Pochettino keeps playing the striker, Adjeman, he's terrible. Oh, he keeps playing Arfston, he's terrible. Pochettino doesn't know what he's doing. cool. You're kind of graduating a little bit because before it used to be worse 10, 15 years ago, but you're missing the point. You're picking at a scapegoat, and you're not rising up and directing your focus and your ire where it should be directed. So I do blame you guys. It's true. Look, let me rant on this a little bit more, Ben. You saw Pochettino's comments after the game praising the Guatemalan fans and the supporters. And it seemed from the noise in the stadium when I would tune in, yeah, it was like 90% Guatemala and 10% maybe the U.S. men's national team. And they were loud and rowdy, and it energizes the team that way, Guatemala. And you have these former U.S. men's national team players, former MLS guys or whatever, Charlie Davies or Hercules Gomez, out there in the media saying, oh, Pochettino, you know, well, let me tell you what Pochettino said. He also, aside from praising them, they're like, that's kind of, he implied that's the culture we need in this country for the U.S., okay? So he's kind of blaming the fans also and the culture of the supporters, that they're not up to snuff. And now you have, again, Hercules Gomez or Charlie Davies or these guys saying, oh, how dare Pochettino say something like that? Why is he pointing the finger at the fans? The fans are, you know, the best thing that we have, blah, 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 blah. See, you guys are the problem. Hercules yeah. Gomez is the problem. Charlie Davies is the problem. You guys should be saying, yeah, Pochettino has a point. The Guatemalans and the Guatemalan Americans are legit, authentic, hardcore people. And our fans, the U.S. men's national team fans, are soft and weak and entertainment only, and it's only a game, casual observers. This is a fact. So going back to your comment, Benny, this is why I'm, quote unquote, insulting the fans. Yeah, because you fucking suck. You guys suck ass. You're terrible. You are kind of the problem here with the program and with the ecosystem as a whole. You support it. And you think that you're the way that you are a fan is the way to be a fan. No, it's not.
So, Gary, for the casual fans, I mean, even that word right there, casual, to them, it seems like, you know, the U.S. men's national team or soccer in general is like a something to distract them from life, or something that's like, oh, just there's a game on the weekend, I'm going to go with my family. Like, do those people, should they be learning more about the game and more about the national team and the way things work? Or is it on the responsibility of that soccer first, you know, generation of people here to bring that change? You know what I mean?
Now see, I do know what you mean. And let me try to plant this seed in everybody, and including you, Ben, to a certain extent. Maybe you know, maybe you're just egging me on here. And that's with the definition of casual fan. The way you described it, the casual fan is like, oh, the family, he just wants to have a good time, a night out, you know, and chose to go to the game instead of going to the movies or whatever. That's not, yes, are those casual fans? Of course they're casual fans. What I call casual fan is Charlie Davies, Landon Donovan, Hercules Gomez, the Sam's Army people, the quote-unquote Barra Bravas, the supporter groups with the drums, you know, at the LAFC game and dancing around the stadium and trying to be all South American-like or European-like. All of that group, you're all casuals. They're all casual fans, all of them. Because what is not a casual fan? Not a casual fan is getting fucking pissed and fighting the power and expressing your social, political, economic, cultural ideologies through the proxy that is football. Do they do that? Yeah, to a certain degree, but it's soft, Benny. They're all soft. They all make excuses. So that is everybody who goes to an MLS game, basically, the hardcores who always are season ticket holders, all casuals. You guys are casuals. All you guys who tailgate for the U.S. men's national team, you know, and you got your American flag on your head and stuff like that. Casual, man.
Yeah.
Like posers, like hipsters.
How is it around the world, Gary? I mean, yeah, I'm sure you've seen the Argentinian fans and, you know, Brazilian fans. These guys are constantly crucifying their national team when things aren't going their way. And even their club teams, like, how do you describe those fans, and like what type of actions do those fans make that we're not making here in the U.S.?
Okay, two things. One, I'll give you the qualitative, the stuff that is not objective, that I can't communicate. And you're like, oh, okay, I see the objective metrics that you're using to define these sorts of terms. The subjective one is you feel it. It's in the blood. It's in the DNA. You're, it's just, you live it. You embody it. this sort of thing. Okay, what does that mean, Gary? I don't know what that means. Okay, I'm just throwing it out there. The objective one, which is what you're asking, is crystal clear example now with Christian Pulisic saying, oh, I'm going to take a break, you know, and recover and all that stuff. Anybody who defended Christian Pulisic and that decision is a casual and doesn't, you don't get it. Okay. If it's in Argentine, you get murdered. You cannot do that. You can't. So the Argentine fan base, the Argentine supporters will not tolerate that shit. You're dead. You are dead to the national team. You are not welcome back here. So anybody who's kind of like okay with Christian coming back and stuff, you know, that's the difference, Benny. That is the difference. So I know, I'm sure you saw that I posted on X that we should just keep Diego Luna and cut Pulisic. You're out. Gone. And this is, again, Jurgen Klinsmann did exactly this with Landon Donovan. And that proves that Jurgen Klinsmann is legit. He is real soccer. He embodies it. Everybody who got pissed off that he cut Landon Donovan, you don't live it. You don't breathe it. You don't feel it. You are a casual.
Yeah. How do we change that, Gary? Because in most all countries around the world, obviously, like the phrase that you said, football is in their blood. And there's a lot of people here that say like, oh, this is the U.S. We're just not like that here. Football's not in our blood. I mean, how long is it going to take, and how do we even get that? How do we get people to start caring more about the game and the national team? Is it even possible, Gary, at this point?
Ben, this again is misguided. We do have it in our blood in this country. What you are describing is the monoculture, the quote unquote white, suburban, middle class, affluent, upper middle class, wealthy demographic, which is the demographic that MLS targets, and it is the demographic that the U.S. Soccer Federation caters to. That group, I don't know, maybe it'll take three generations for them to maybe one day develop what it is I'm describing. But here in this country, we already have, in greater numbers than them, Americans who do feel it and are legit. The 90% feeling of the Guatemala versus the U.S. game last night, that all those Guatemalans, the vast majority, if not all of them, are Americans. They're American citizens. They just have their heritage from Guatemala or their parents from Guatemala. Okay, that group, they aren't showing up to MLS matches. That group isn't showing up and rooting for the U.S. men's national team when they're playing somebody other than Guatemala, right? Let's say the U.S. men's national team is playing against, I don't know, Russia or something like this, whatever. That group of Guatemalan Americans aren't going to the stadium and going hardcore for the U.S. men's national team. Why? Why don't they show up? Because they have the culture. They love soccer. They love it more than the casuals that I just finished describing. Why aren't they showing up? Because they have been excluded from the system here. They have been disenfranchised from the system here. The system here doesn't value them, doesn't want them, doesn't care for them because they are too passionate. They care too much. And though that group, that demographic, is not allowed to create a club in their own image with their own values and their own rule sets and allowed to compete and merit their way up and down the ecosystem. They are not allowed to do this, Benny. So they don't have a club that represents them, and they don't have a national team that represents them. Because even though they're Americans, the national team, the federation, represents that other group. They don't want the Guatemalans. They don't want the Mexican Americans. They don't want the Latino Americans. They don't want all these real, legitimate, soccer-first, hardcore, passionate households in the system. Not allowed, Benny. So we do have the culture.
Right, but okay, so Gary, even if we do have the culture, I mean, how do we get these people to actually start supporting? Is it promotion, relegation is the only way?
Yes.
To allow these people to start their own clubs in their own communities, and then you start getting that more feeling of, you know, pride to support your team, and okay, this is the country that my team operates in, now I'm going to support my national team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if you're able to start your own organization, your own clubs in your own image and merit your way through the system, at some point, eventually, and this is probably what the establishment also fears, the best players are going to come from those demographics. And the national team is going to be filled with players from those demographics. And when that happens, those demographics are going to go to the stadium and support like crazy, because this player and that player and this coach and that technical director are part of their community. The formula here is all wrong, Benny. The establishment kind of wants to get their dollars and make them a customer and make them part of it. But the way that they're doing it, instead of enabling them to build their own stuff, the way that they try to do it is like they try to hire or get a token player or two from that community once in a while. And somehow that's going to fill seats in stadiums. Like Chivas USA was this experiment in precisely this. It's like, oh, let's call this team Chivas and put it in Southern California with this huge Mexican-American population. And all of a sudden, the Mexican-Americans are going to show up to the stadium because it's like a quote-unquote Chivas team. Nobody gave a fuck because it's not really Mexican, right? It's not really part of their community. And when Jorge Vergara took over Chivas USA and took over the team, and he wanted to establish what I just finished describing, and one of the things that came out in the press was, oh, Jorge Vergara is instituting that they're going to be a Spanish first speaking organization, right? Everybody went crazy, Benny. The media started smearing him. They started smearing Chivas USA. And ultimately, it led to the whole demise of the franchise. And now I'm sure you've seen the rumors of the Tottenham Hotspur Korean, I forget his name, Son. Rumored to maybe come to LAFC, or I don't even know what franchise it's been rumored, or New York. I don't even know. LAFC. So everybody in the media is, where is it? LAFC. So everybody in the media is now like, oh, this is great. You know, there's a big Korean community here in SoCal and LA. It's going to fill the stadium. It's going to attract all this stuff. This is the angle that they try to play to get people who love soccer to go and support a franchise. So to answer your question, which we already kind of did, none of these things matter. It's all superficial. We, the hardcores, the passionate, the real ones, don't buy into any of it. And the only way that'll change is with an open ecosystem where we're able to build things that we want to build.
Yeah. Okay. If you say that there's, you know, a lot of hardcores here in a massive demographic of this, but if that's the case, then how come, or why do you think more people aren't fighting or pushing for change or pushing for promotion or relegation?
Why are they not?
Yeah. Why are they not?
Two things. The biggest one is they're unaware, Benny. They're unaware. I am actually, and I've said it before, I am actually quite embarrassed that it took me decades of being in the ecosystem and decades of working in the ecosystem to finally realize that this is the issue. It's embarrassing. It took me this long. It's embarrassing. But once you see it, you can't unsee it. So the vast majority of them don't even know that the reason is the ecosystem is closed and there's no promotion relegation. They don't know. It's ignorance, Ben.
Yeah. They just feel that they've been jaded and fucking locked out by the system.
Yeah. They feel that they've been done dirty because everybody encounters the quote unquote discrimination. And again, it's not a racial thing. It's a business ecosystem thing. Certain groups and demographics are discriminated against in the sense that they can't build and compete their way in the system. So the youth clubs, I can go to any Mexican or Mexican American or Latino or whatever here in Southern California, and who wanted to compete in club soccer, competitive club soccer. And they'll all tell me stories of, oh yeah, I wasn't allowed to enter my team into league X, Y, or Z, you know? So these are the Mexican leagues that I'm talking about, the Mexican teams. They'll form a team, they have a team, and then they go and apply to whether it be ECNL, MLS Next, or even the lowest of levels, right? Back in my day, it was the Coast Soccer League, the best league here in the country. You're just not allowed to go in there because there's all these rules and regulations that you have to abide by. And though those demographics don't conform to those rules and regulations, and sometimes they're just plain told not to do it. And individual players who do get to compete on the white suburban clubs or the traditional clubs, the parents, the families, the players themselves, they'll have their own stories of feeling discriminated against. They're looked at like, oh yeah, that's the Mexican family. And yeah, John, you know, Jose's really good, but they feel that they're not a part of it. Does that make sense? They feel that they're really not part of the family that is the team or the club or with the other parents and the families.
Yeah, that makes sense. Gary, do you consider, for example, like a TFA or Strikers, Pats, like a lot of those teams have, a lot of those clubs have teams within their club that are 95% of the roster are Mexican-American, but do you still consider those teams and clubs that are competing at UCNL or MLS Next like suburban culture?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Even if they have an entire roster of Mexican players?
Absolutely. Because who has the power? Is it the Mexicans that have the power? Is it the Mexican-Americans that have the power? Are they the ones who are running the club? Are they the ones who are the DOCs? Are they the ones who are the coaches? Who is actually running the club? And whoever is actually running the club is making the rules and the policies and the codes of conduct and all that sort of stuff. So they're restricting the culture. Example everybody is very well aware of. Passion isn't really allowed on the sidelines, right? Okay, why not? Who came up with that policy? What is the demographic that came up with that policy? Why can't you express yourself the way that you want to express yourself with your Latin passion on the sidelines? So the culture is being suppressed, Ben. Even though 95% of the roster could be Latino, they don't hold the power.
Yes. Okay, the sad thing is that I've seen it so many times where some of the best teams that I've ever seen come from small clubs that aren't allowed into these leagues. For example, there's like a very small club, Anaheim FC, and most of those teams aren't allowed to compete in the top leagues, but some of their teams and some of the kids that I've seen are some of the best that I've seen in this region, you know, but again, because they don't conform to the rules, they're not allowed to compete. And think about how many players that the U.S. is missing out on because these types of players or teams aren't allowed to compete in their system. It's pretty sad.
Yeah. No, it is sad. And it's even more sad when people don't get it and their brain gets broken when we say these sorts of stuff, Benny, because what they see and what they've been fed by the media machine is, Gary, what are you talking about? Look at Diego Luna. Diego Luna is not what you're describing. He is hardcore. He's Mexican-American, right, Ben? He's Mexican-American. He's coming from the demographic that you're talking about. So you absolutely can. Nobody's being discriminated against. Look at him. He's reaching the highest peaks of the mountain. Okay. A token guy here or there doesn't change the fact of at scale, this is what's going on. And the fear of the incumbents is if we opened it up, you know what the national team is going to look like? It's going to look like all the Alunas. Okay. You know what the highest levels of the country here are going to look like? It's all going to be Diego Luna's. You don't want that, though. You want to be able to play your political games and your nepo games and your money games and the things that you can't compete on and have your children exceed at and be able to excel in the ecosystem as a coach or as a DOC or as an owner or something like that. You want those things to be the most valuable things, not the actual sporting side of the equation. Because on the sporting side of the equation, you're going to lose.
Damn, dude. How sick would our national team be if we had all these different types of Mexican heritage, Chilean? Think about how many different nationalities or descendants of different nationalities live in this country, bro. And you're telling me we can't come up with a starting 11 of a team that could compete on the global stage, bro? Come on.
Benny, we have millions of soccer-first households in this country. Millions. We have more soccer-passionate households in this country than the entire country of Uruguay. And what I'm talking about in Uruguay is 3.2 million. I don't even know what the population is anymore. I'm talking about every single human being in Uruguay, from an infant that was just born to the 95-year-old great-grandfather. I'm counting all of those people. We have more soccer-first households in our country alone than their entire population. And who's better at football? Now, yeah. Oh, Gary, there's other factors. You know, it's a small country, so the density is different. Guys, where there's a will, there's a way, okay? We have an incredible country. We have world-class infrastructure. We have world-class levels of money. We have world-class media. We have world-class, you name it. Every single parameter in the United States of America is superior than every single parameter in Uruguay or in Chile or in Colombia or in Venezuela. Name, rattle off 100 things, except for one parameter. The one parameter that we are inferior at is that we have made soccer of, by, and for a very specific demographic. And it happens to be the demographic that is doesn't know shit about soccer, is terrible at soccer. That's who we made it for. That's why we suck. And we're still pretty good, right? We're top 20 in the world or something like that. We're still goddamn pretty good because of all the other things that we have is world-class compared to everybody else, man.
Yeah. Do you think, Gary, it'll be a case of kind of like the U.S. women's national team, whereas the reason that they were so good is because all the other countries in the world didn't fucking care about soccer and then in terms of women, right? And then once they started to, that gap started to close really quickly. So do you think it'll be the same end in 10, 15, 20 years when more people open their eyes to this issue of promotion relegation and a closed system? Do you think we can catch up to the rest of the world superpowers?
Yeah, man. If the system were open here, just like the women in the rest of the world versus our women, if we opened up the system here, our men's program would close the gap like this. Like this. What does that look like? I don't know. I would say within 10 years, because you still need the turnover, right? The machines of promotion relegation have to work. You have to give it a little bit of time so that the communities and the demographics that I'm talking about, the legit soccer first, passionate ones, have to work their way up the system and beat the other demos. And so over the course of time, they'll rise to the top. But that would take 5 to 10 years.
Here, you said it took a while for you to open your eyes to what was happening. At what point did you realize that this is kind of the reason behind everything? And how did you realize it?
Yeah, I can't pinpoint a moment. I think it was a gradual sort of thing. What I can tell you for sure is that a gentleman by the name of Ted Westervelt, who goes by the Twitter handle Soccer Reform, has been on Twitter for a very long time. He's the one who really was the most prolific maybe 15 years ago or 20 years ago or however long it's been. He was the one who's the most prolific at publishing about promotion relegation, and that is what we need in this country. And so I would just consume some of his things, you know, over the course of 6 months or a year, and I'm sure seeds were planted. And then I started, you know, that in conjunction with Brian competing in the best league, youth league in the country back then, which was Coast Soccer League. Brian competing there and earning his way up through promotions because his team would win every single time. Though I think those two things together were very influential in allowing me to see what's going on, because Brian, who was a nobody in soccer coaching 20 years ago, and then he started coaching and is very good at it, the promotion relegation system enabled him to rise all the way to the very top of the country, Benny. And he became known as a consequence of that. So it was promotion relegation that enabled the cream to rise to the top, Ben.
Right.
So that definitely opened my eyes, because once they started shutting that thing down, like when they started the U.S. Soccer Development Academy in 2007, when they started that, and then that it started destroying the Coast Soccer League, and you couldn't earn your way into the U.S. Soccer Development Academy. You had to be selected to go in there. That, you know, hammered it home even more. It's like, oh, well, thank God Brian started coaching back then and showed the country what he's capable of. And that's how he got into Chivas USA and making Chivas USA one of the best youth academies in the country in and of itself. Thank God Brian started back then, because if Brian started coaching maybe 10 years ago, you know, when the system closed up, he'd still be incredible and remarkable and amazing. But I'm not so sure that you're able to climb the ladder.
Right. I'm curious, Gary, what were your thoughts? Because obviously at the time you didn't realize about this whole promotion relegation thing, but what was your thoughts on like the MLS league when it first started? Were you watching the games? And because I know you and Brian watched a lot of Argentinian games, so clearly the level was way higher than what it was here in the country. But what did you think of the MLS, like when it, in the early days of MLS?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I thought the names were. I thought the names were cool. I was in high school. Okay, so 1996, and the Galaxy was the home team, right? Because I was here in Southern California. I liked the name Galaxy because I was interested in physics and mathematics, right? And the stars and astrophysics. I'm like, ooh, the Galaxy. Wow, what a coincidence. I love this stuff. You know, this is great. And I also kind of liked the other teams and the logos and the names, like Dallas Burn or Tampa Bay Mutiny, you know. It was fun. And that was back when I was, you know, again, in high school. So I was still aspirational as a player. I'm like, ooh, you know, maybe if I work really hard, you know, I might have a chance or something like that. And, you know, I went to a whole bunch of games. I watched a whole bunch of games on TV for the ensuing 10 years. I liked it. It was cool. I got to play with a lot of the guys who played MLS because at the time I was playing, you know, for Marcelo Balboa's dad here in Cerritos. Marcelo Balboa, for those who, you know, are a little bit younger, U.S. men's national team, quote unquote, legend, defender, and he's Argentinian. The dad's Argentinian, so he's an Argentine-American. So since I was playing there, when they were in the off season, you know, Marcelo Balboa would come and train with us and play scrimmages with us, and he would bring other men's national team players once in a while also. And he'd jump in with us, and we were 17 years old or whatever, however old I was at the time. So I'm like, oh shit, that's Thomas Dooley. Oh shit, that's Marcelo Balboa. Oh shit, that's, I forget the other guy who was playing for Dallas Burn at the time. Or Fernando Clavijo. Oh shit, he's training tonight, you know. It was exciting times, Ben. But I was young. I didn't know what the fuck's going on. And I didn't know what the fuck was going on up until maybe, like I said, 2010-ish, something like that, when it really started hitting me.
Yeah. Did you think that it was a high level? Like, did you think like, oh, wow, the quality of these games or these players are amazing? Yeah.
Well, I thought the players were really good, obviously, because they would come and they would be the best. No, I already knew because, again, the Argentine heritage and, you know, everybody would kind of like laugh when we were thinking about the U.S. men's national team. Oh, they're going to get crushed. You know, the 1990 World Cup. Oh, that's cute that the U.S. is in the 1990 World Cup. We'll see how it goes. And then obviously that trickles to the MLS. So it's like cute little professional league you got going on there. But let's be real. Like if you had to play real teams like Boca Juniors, something like that, you're going to get annihilated. So I knew the level wasn't great. Did I know exactly what the level was? Of course not. Of course not. You're 17, you're 22, you're 25 years old. Even at 25, 26, you don't fucking know shit, Benny. Okay. You don't know dick. You haven't experienced enough. You haven't watched enough. You haven't studied enough to really kind of measure and see what the gaps are with what.
Who is your team in Argentina? You're a Boca guy?
No, Vélez Sarsfield. And the reason it was Vélez Sarsfield is because of the goalkeeper, José Luis Chilavert, one of the best goalkeepers, I'm not going to say of all time. I'm just going to say at the time of his prime, he was probably considered the best goalkeeper in the world. And he would wear like his goalkeeper outfit. He would have a bulldog, you know, it was black and with a orangish bulldog. And I don't know, I just fell in love with this guy. And he was so good, in fact, too, that when his team would have a free kick in the opponent's outside the 18 or something, he was the free kick taker. He would go over there and he's the one who takes the free kick. And bro, I'm telling you, I don't want to exaggerate and say it's kind of like Messi, but he was that good where it's like, oh, fuck, like there's a high probability that there's a goal here. Yeah. Absolute legend, man. He was the man. And there was another field player. His name was Baceda, one of my favorite players. So Vélez Sarsfield, to answer your question, Ben.
I never heard of them, but not glad I did. All right,
and this was also the time when Carlos Bianchi was the manager of the team. So I'm talking like mid-90s sort of thing. Do you even know who Carlos Bianchi is?
I only know the name because I think you brought him up on the podcast before.
Got you. Also, legend Argentine coach. One of the best.
Was did Brian have a different team than you, or you guys were the same?
Did what? Say that again?
Brian, he had a different team than you?
River.
And so whenever they played, you guys would probably go at it, no?
Nah, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that. I think, I don't know. I mean, we would talk shit once in a while. And then, you know, when all our friends, again, who were Latino Americans principally, would come over to the park, we'd all meet up at the park to play pickup games, like for hours and hours and hours and hours on a weekly basis. Yeah, there was massive shit talking there, as you can imagine. But aside from that, it wasn't like crazy.
Yeah. All right. That one comment took up 40 minutes of time, but it's okay. I like that. But here's another one. I listen often, and in my honest opinion, the negativity on this podcast has reached a new high. I get the differences in play and all that, the roots of suburbia lowering skill level and the pay-to-play, but man, the negativity is overwhelming. You're purist about how development should be done, though, and that's why I watch. Thoughts, Gary?
Okay, so Ben, I know my response was there because I try to respond to as many YouTube comments as I can when I have time. And basically the response was, yeah, you know, consistently telling the truth is a rough ride, you know, because we all kind of want to believe our own lies and we want to live in fairy land with rainbows and unicorns and all that sort of stuff. And that gives you, I don't know, what do they say? Ignorance is bliss sort of thing. So if somebody comes around and is saying, hey, I want to take you out of ignorance, then that feels like it feels terrible, right? Because I'm taking you out of bliss. If ignorance is bliss and I'm coming and try to make you not ignorant anymore, then I'm taking you away from bliss. Now, some more stuff. 99% of media out there and or podcasters or writers or anybody in the ecosystem, it's all painting positive pictures. 99%, Ben. Oh, the future is bright. Look at this Diego Luna kid. We never had somebody like this before. Things are changing in the United States. And I've heard this song and dance forever. Maybe you're just new to this, right? And you haven't lived through so many of these future is bright sort of cycles. But guys, you have a huge repository reservoir of 99% who are constantly positive. And I'm just that 1%. So I think it's important to get that 1% so you can have some sort of balance in what's being fed into your minds. The other thing I like to say is, okay, let's talk positive, Benny. Can you bring up something positive? What can I say that is positive? Here, let me try to say something that's positive. It seems like over the course of time, more and more people are coming to realize what the root problem is in the country. So that's a positive development. I don't know how much more you want me to say about it because there's the statement. Now what do we do about it? Right. So if I'm going to start talking about what are the solutions to that root problem, which is what 343 has been doing forever, then the discussion of the solutions have an injection of negativity associated with it because you're trying to tackle a problem. So you have to continually address the problem. What else is positive, Ben? It's kind of tangential and in line. It looks like USL is getting stronger and stronger and stronger and healthier, right? The second division and third division in this country. So that's lending more professional playing opportunities to more players in our country and more pathways to younger and youth players to have something to go to if MLS doesn't elevate you or select you. So that's positive. That's cool. The other thing that's positive about it is maybe, perhaps, it injects some competition into the ecosystem. And maybe if they truly want promotion relegation, as is reported in the media, maybe with their growing power, they can help force the Federation or force FIFA or force, you know, the powers that be into opening the system up. So that's a positive spin on it. But if you think that I'm going to come on here, you know, regularly and say, oh yeah, the U.S. men's national team is going to the Gold Cup final. We beat Guatemala 2-1. Everything. I mean, things are looking good. You know, there's progress. You're not going to get that from me because I would be lying. It is a lie. But that's the problem fundamentally, Benny.
Yeah. I think you're.
I would be lying to you.
Right. Your direct quote was, most everyone puts lipstick on pigs, not us.
I think that's about right. I think that's about right, dude.
Yeah, dude. I see it so many, Gary, on a lot of your Twitter posts or sometimes when I post the Instagram reels, people are always just saying like, oh, Gary, why are you such a hater? Like, why can't you just, why can't you be happy for Diego Luna? Or why do you have to slander the men's national team? Like, they're making progress. But I think if you were doing all these things, Gary, and like putting so much effort and passion into this, I think that would be more of a sign of like you not caring about the national team and not caring about the ecosystem and fighting for everybody's rights in this country. It just, I don't know. It's, to me, it's so backwards when people say like, oh, Gary, you're such a hater. Well, who else is talking about change? And like, if you don't talk about it and if you don't pursue it, nothing's ever going to happen. The level of the national team is going to stay the same for the next 100 years. So the people that aren't saying anything, to me, those are the haters, bro. Putting, like you said, putting lipstick on pigs, bro.
Yeah. And let me be clear also. I am happy for Diego Luna. I'm not hating on him.
Yeah.
I'm happy for the kid. Absolutely. I'm happy for all the players. I am on the player side. I fight for the players. I fight for players' rights. I fight for the rights of all of us who work in this space. I'm just, hey, if you ask me about the sporting side of the equation, I'm not going to put a lipstick on a pig. Okay. I'm not going to tell you this is a future Barcelona player. Okay. It's just nonsense. And I'll end with this, Ben. If I was not a positive guy or didn't think positively, I wouldn't be doing this, Benny, because I would be wasting my, it'd be a huge waste of time. I actually believe that change is not only possible, but is inevitable. I think that we can do all the good things that we say need to be done. Otherwise, I wouldn't fucking do it, Benny. I am a glass is half full type of guy. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. This other guy is pretty similar, but at least he kind of understands as to why you're doing it. He says, I was listening to 3 for 3 for a while now, and you guys are depressing to listen to sometimes. This guy's in the corner, fucking all sad. But it's the truth as much as it's a hard pill to swallow. Especially having a young kid that loves soccer as much as they do. Don't get me wrong. I do enjoy it, though. I respect that guy.
Yeah, it's cool. Now, I think for the most part, a lot of communication context gets lost in comments and in writing. I think for the most part, people get it. They do. But, and I also get that what we do here is so different than everybody else, where everybody else is constantly putting lipstick on pigs, that it's like, it comes across as like, what is wrong with Gary? This is weird.
Oh man. Hilarious, bro. Hilarious.
It's weird. Sometimes I say that soccer is a reflection of society. I don't say that, you know, legends from way back in the day, say things like that. And it truly is, because if you look at today's political climate, for instance, because everybody kind of follows it one way or another. You got the right, you got the right fights the left fights the right, blue states, red states, all this polarization, you know, the two-party system, and nobody gets to the root of it. The fucking whole system's fucked, basically. Yep. Okay. It's all one and the same. They all do the same sort of thing. Blue gets in charge, our debt goes through the roof. Spending galore, you know, there's no fiscal conservatism, nothing. The red gets in charge and they promise the opposite. Guess what the red does? They do the same thing that the blue does. And then the pendulum swings back and forth. So they're all doing the same shit. So it's not that red is bad or blue is bad. The whole fucking thing is in shambles. So we need to get to the root of problems. And that's kind of what I do. I've been trained to do this, Benny. I studied physics. This is what physics is all about. You strip everything down and you try to go to the fundamental level to see what are the rules that then govern everything else. What are the fundamental rules? Because the fundamental rules are what are in charge. So I that's when I encounter a problem, I strip it down and try to get to the foundation.
Yes.
And when you get to the foundation, you see the dirtiness. That's what we're airing out here.
For sure. And the guy, I mean, some of the stuff that we say, dude, is depressing, bro. Like the fact that some Latino teams and communities can't get into this league or that league and people are being shunned. And especially if you have a kid in the ecosystem and you see all these problems that we're exposing and nobody else is talking about, it's, you know, yeah, dude, sometimes I leave here sad too, bro.
And bro, but again, I am positive. It's just, you got to find the positivity. So for instance, I literally am telling you guys that the fans and the supporters have the power. You guys have the power. And when I look at folks out there who put lipstick on pigs and stuff like that, they're depressing to me, because what their narrative is that the fans, the supporters, the people don't have the power. It's only the people in charge who have the power. Oh, well, Gary, what can we possibly do? The owners of MLS control everything. You know, that's depressing to me. It's like, no, motherfuckers, let's go. Let's get to work. Let's solve it. Let's take over this bitch. You know, that is positivity. We have the fucking power. That is a positive statement, Benny.
Yeah. When you say, Gary, the fans have the power, like, what are actionable steps that they can take to change this?
Boycott the shit out of everything, and then be like me. Talk shit on the fucking system. Tell, fucking repeatedly say the system should be torn to shreds, torn to smithereens. And these are the reasons why. There is no opportunity in this system. There is no meritocracy in the system. Sports is supposed to be a meritocratic, one of the most meritocratic things on earth, right? It's like who wins and who loses. That is supposed to govern who makes it to the top and who doesn't make it to the top. Fight this fight. That is what the fans need to do. And call out all those fuck faces who are perpetually positive. Call out all those people who are constantly saying, oh, things are improving, things are good. Look, the national team, look, MLS is growing. It's got 30 teams now. Look, Atlanta United filled the stadium up, you know, when Inter Miami came over. Combat all of these sorts of things. And now they're trying to shit on Mauricio Pochettino, and everybody's buying it hook, line, and sinker. Every one of these fans who listen to the quote-unquote positive idiots out there in the media trying to smear Pochettino, they've all bought into this idea that Pochettino doesn't know what he's doing. And so you're falling for it. You're falling for blaming a scapegoat instead of going to the heart of the matter, which is the system.
No, dude, I think you're spot on, but when you said boycott, I think... Let's say all these soccer first households and that whole demographic, they boycott MLS. I still think there's that.
No, they already have. No, Benny, let me interrupt. The soccer first households already boycott MLS. I'm talking about the demographic that supports MLS.
People never will, dude. Those people never will, because they're cool with the way things are. They like the name of their team. They like going to the stadium. And isn't that the fans that MLS want in their stadiums?
No, bro. Like the vast majority of our audience is kind of that demographic. And I'm sorry to be like this and say this, but the vast majority of people who listen to us are ones who are tuning into the men's national team and are saying things like the future is bright and are going to and taking their kids to MLS matches and are taking their kids to MLS Next, you know, and saying, oh, we should leave this club and go to MLS Next. Or that's our audience, Benny. These comments about, oh, Gary, you're so negative, let's be positive and stuff like that. I'm not pinpointing any particular person, because maybe I'm wrong in a particular person's case, but these sorts of commentary tell me that you are from that demographic that is upholding the establishment. Like how often are the people in our audience who do want change and stuff, how often are they actually telling their soccer circles these things that we talk about? How often are they posting on Instagram or X or wherever these things that we're talking about? They're not doing it. And if they are, they're not doing it very often. So, and they want change, right? So I'm telling you, this is how you change it.
I'm depressed now, dude.
No, don't be depressed, dude. This is all part of the process. And I think we've made incredible strides towards the ultimate objective. Look at the incredible strides. Everybody talks about promotion relegation now too. Compared to what it used to be like 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, everybody and their mom talks about promotion relegation as being part of the problem. They don't know it's the root and it's everything, but at least the conversation is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, to the point where USL, whether they're lying to us or not, to the point that they are saying, oh, we're going to try to institute some sort of promotion relegation. Why? Because that's what the people say that they want.
Yeah, the stones are starting to rain, bro.
Don't be depressed. Don't be depressed, Benny. Don't be depressed. And look at the change that we have made at the youth level, Benny. Incredible change that we have made with the coaching education program. Now, everybody and their mom tries to kind of build out of the back and tries to play better, you know, than it was 10, 15 years ago. Ben, you don't remember maybe because you were too young, but 10, 15 years ago, fucking shocking, Benny. At least now, they might suck at it. They may not know what they're doing that much, but there's more teams that are trying and more coaches that are kind of trying to build, right? Yeah. And there's more people out there that kind of understand that we aren't developing the players that the media tries to tell us that, you know, the system is starting to develop. Yeah, they're starting to get it. They're starting to get it. They shit on me when I talked, when I said McKinney is not the guy. He's not the player profile for the type of football that is the gold standard. And people shit on me. Oh, la, ha, ha, look at you. He just got purchased by Juventus, you know, and ha, ha, he's a starter on Juventus. And look, you're so stupid, Gary. You don't know. They're starting to learn that he isn't. They're starting to come around. But this is the problem of, I know this is going to sound arrogant or whatever, but fuck it. This is the problem with being like on the cutting edge or being a pioneer, something like that. Everybody else is 5 to 10 years behind. The pioneers see shit right away on the cutting edge. And everybody else, it takes 5 to 10 years for them to catch up to where the pioneer was already there 5 to 10 years ago. But they're catching up. They're starting to get it. They're starting to see, oh, Tyler Adams isn't what we thought Tyler Adams was, right? They're starting to see, oh, look, Gio Reyna is not who we thought Gio Reyna was. Like, the kid doesn't play on Dortmund. He doesn't even sniff a minute. He didn't even sniff a single minute in the Club World Cup. Why? Oh, because Dortmund are stupid? Is that why? Or maybe he's not the player that you thought he was. And not to shit on Gio Reyna. I've said it a million times. A very good player. Top caliber player. Lots of potential. Still very young. Could reach some of the highest mountains in the game, of course. And he's got a great network around him. And his dad's a legend. So he's got all that going for him. But he's not what these people here were making him out to be. They were making him out to be on the level of Jude Bellingham. Because Bellingham was with him at Dortmund and kind of got their first professional minutes together there at Dortmund. So they thought Jude Bellingham, Gio Reyna, same sort of thing. No, it's not the same thing.
Yeah. And so they'll never come out.
A lot of positive for you there, Benny.
Thanks, dude. Thanks for cheering me up, bro. All right, bro. Good stuff, man.
Okay, so what's up? We're up against Mexico next. Predictions?
3-1 U.S. Diego Luna scores another goal. Aji Monk's going to get a goal, and people are going to start saying, no, this is the guy for the World Cup. Yeah, it's same old story, bro. Luna's going to be the hero. That's my prediction. 3-1 U.S.
Okay, cool. I'm going to predict that Aji Monk scores a brace, and I don't know who's going to win, but Big Pat's going to score two goals and quiet people's mouths.
Let's go, dude.
Hey, do you not see the resemblance between SpongeBob and Diego Luna?
Hey, dude, I do, bro. I do.
I want to make it happen, bro. I want to make that happen.
AI, bro.
I'm going to make that shit happen. Eventually, Diego Luna's Wikipedia page is going to have a little phrase there saying, referred to as SpongeBob.
Fucking Stu Holden's going to be fucking saying that in the next match, bro.
No, it'll take a while. They don't want it to happen, but it's going to happen. I'm going to force it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, dude, if when that guy has the body like that and starts getting fucking stronger, this fool should be able to knock anybody off the ball, bro, or never get taken down, bro. You know?
Yeah,
Nobody takes SpongeBob down.
Nobody takes, and SpongeBob is one of the most positive creations and creatures there is, right?
He is, bro. He's a legend. Dude. He's a cult hero.
Okay, great, Benny. Great. Cool. That's a wrap. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you.
Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com.
Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.